welcome to another edition of the Curses and Champions podcast, an exclusive podcast of the Chicago Sports Column. Alongside Darren Zittin and Ryan Wooden, I'm Matt Gentile, and we're talking some Cubs today, and there's a lot going on since the last time we spoke. So I'm just going to run down some things here. Yu Darvish, out for the season.
Yeah.
The Cub killer Daniel Murphy is a Cub.
I don't know how to feel.
Yeah, there's a lot of
it's
lot
like
of
I'm betraying my soul rooting for him. It's weird.
Well, for a lot of reasons, but
yeah.
Which we will get to because I will not allow us to gloss over them.
Absolutely. Cole Hamels becoming a Cub and now pitching like an ace caliber pitcher. I mean, there's
best starter on the staff right now.
So there's been a lot since the last time we spoke. Last time we spoke was around the All-Star break about the Cubbies. But I want to start off with Yu Darvish in particular. He was undergoing his second rehab start in South Bend on Sunday. While I was at the Sox game, I was at the Sox game because my girlfriend had some comped tickets. I was in the 500 level. Not that bad.
I dig the 500 level. That's the last White Sox game I went to. We sat up there.
It's not terrible. But while I was there, you know, I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see that he, after one inning, he's doing his warm-up tosses in the second, and he motions that he's got to come out. I'm like, oh, here we go again. And I kind of had that bad feeling in the back of my head. But it sounds like it was serious. After the MRI, they found a stress reaction, which is kind of ironic because I think a lot of Cubs fans have had a stress reaction to everything that Darvish has done so far.
Every time Tyler Chatwood pitches, we have a stress reaction.
So that too. But Yu Darvish now is out for the stretch run. He's out for the season. Got to look to next year. There was, I think, some growing optimism since the A-Rod comments and him having those bullpen sessions and whatnot and getting better and stronger each time out. And you had a feeling that he would be available down the stretch, and now not going to be here.
Yeah, it really sucks. I mean, as a Cub fan, you know, you were hoping he would come back and fill that void in the rotation with, you know, Chatwood not being, you know, anywhere serviceable for a major league pitcher. Mike Montgomery, who was actually doing pretty well as a starter, but he's now on the DL. You know, they don't have any arms. I mean, you could throw Jesse Chavez out there for maybe a spot start or two, but with injuries in the bullpen, you know, Brandon Morrow's out, you know, Dunsing's out, not that he was very good, but still you're missing key pieces in that bullpen. You got to keep him in there.
Worth noting on Jesse Chavez, I rode him on a couple spot starts in a fantasy season last year. Worked out.
By the way, also
extremely lucky, but it worked out.
Jorge De La Rosa has come back from the dead, and
he's still pitching
pretty well for the Cubs as a lefty.
It's interesting you brought that up. So the spot starter is going to end up being Alec Mills on Friday.
Alec Mills, yeah.
It's kind of interesting because a lot of people thought Dwayne Underwood was going to be the guy, and it's going to be Mills. And it's weird. Mills was the guy that Theo Epstein brought up when referring to Darvish's stress reaction, that Alec Mills had this and was shelved for 6 weeks. No light tossing, no throwing, nothing. Basically just shut down. How much has this weighed on you as a Cubs fan, Darren? Like, all the drama with Darvish, you know, the questions about mental toughness, the injury setbacks that we've seen, you know, from June to now. Like, how taxing has that been on you as a Cubs fan?
I mean, not as taxing as how it's been for Darvish, apparently. You know, after reading his blog post today, that
he should blog for the Chicago Sports Column. We gotta see if we can.
He's got some downtime.
That in. Yeah. Also, I speak fluent Japanese as well. That's a callback to a previous podcast.
You gotta listen to the White Sox podcast. That's part two. It is frustrating because you had high expectations. I mean, look, you paid him $126 million.
Yeah, you were hoping he would fill the void of Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, and then, you know, you looked at him as an ace potential guy, and instead you were just like, well, if he can come back and pitch well, we'll be happy. And
yeah,
you're not even getting that production.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there's really not, unfortunately, there's not really a whole lot you can do about it. I mean, he's hurt, you know, and obviously I'm not one of those people that thinks he faked an injury. I think that's ridiculous, and you know, all the people who...
Is there a butt coming here?
All those fans who say, like, oh, you know what, he's making all this money and he's not doing anything, you know, because he's not pitching. think about how much work and how much effort they have to go through to come back from an injury. All the rehab starts. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is his livelihood, and everything is on in his arm.
Well, he came back from a Tommy John injury.
Yeah. You know, so he's already had arm issues in the past. It sucks that you paid all this money and you're not going to get really anything out of him for this entire year. But, you know, for the long term, he could still be a valuable piece for the Cubs rotation, you know. He's still only, I think, 31 years old.
If he doesn't retire.
If he doesn't retire. Now, if he retires, then in the offseason, you trade a few pieces for Jacob DeGrom or Syndergaard or somebody.
Now, he did tell the media today that, you know, retirement's not really in his mindset at this point.
He's got to get some more money.
I think that's a lot of money at this point.
Well, and I was going to say that's a tough thing to pass up too. But I think there is a lot of pride that comes with that. You know, mm-hmm. He's one of those guys that you've heard stories. He's very sensitive about what people say about him. Like he does check social media.
Don't check social media. You stop it. Stop. Twitter is a horrible place.
I thought you were talking to me.
Yeah.
You all can stop it.
Hey, you're talking to me?
No, but Twitter's a horrible place for athletes to read stuff about themselves.
Yeah, well, no.
It's also largely a bad place in general.
It's a dark place for all humanity.
I mean, that's...
Real-time reactions to anything that happens aren't always going to be of the rosiest demeanor.
No. Where I first learned that was Jay Cutler's injury in the NFC Championship game. And think about that.
Yeah.
Questioning
what
toughness.
A fucking pussy. Get back out there. Boo!
You know, and that,
I'd be out there in a wheelchair.
They would just tweet, boo.
You know, I actually did see a tweet. And of course, like, you gotta take everything you see there with a grain of salt. But I did see a tweet that was, you know, I'd give an arm and a leg to just be on the mound for $50,000. And it's like, you know, yeah, okay. Backtrack a little bit there, buddy. First off, you're severely underpaid if you're going out there for $50,000. Okay.
Is this rookie of the year?
Yeah, this is crazy.
Well, one start, $50,000. I mean,
one start, $50,000. But I mean, like, I think people need to woe that thing when you start thinking about. Questioning toughness.
Look,
they're
still human beings. Even though, you know, they're playing a sport for entertainment, they still have emotions and feelings.
And the reality is that, listen, I get it. They make a ton of money. They make a ton of money, and you're not going to feel sorry for them because of the amount of money they make and the amount of struggles that the average human being goes through to live on a day-by-day basis. They don't have the same issues. What they do have is a bunch of shit that you'll never be able to relate to. Like you said with Yu Darvish, have $126 million tied into the tendons through from his wrist down through his elbow to his shoulder. That's fucking madness.
Could you imagine if you went to work every day and like you would just pick up your phone and you'd see a bunch of tweets about you and like what you do at your job
about you?
Yeah, no, seriously though. No. Yeah, you know, things you're doing at your job every day. I mean, that could be grating. Now, I think the other thing that's getting lost, and it's brought up quite a bit, that from a cultural standpoint, I don't want to be sometimes. So I listen to a lot of ESPN 1000, and Jesse Rogers, great Cubs reporter. I think a major asset
to
that station.
Going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, in his mind. But one thing that he tends to do a lot of those will be like, these Latin players or these Japanese players, you know, he kind of gets on that kind of...
Don't do that.
That's a dark area when you go into that. But there is something to say that a lot of Japanese players, they do have immense pride. They take their jobs very seriously. And
very
in baseball,
players.
They take the job very seriously. And they do look at it like a job.
Yeah.
And I think there is something to... Some things that Darvish said in that blog post about, you know, that he knew he was hurt. He felt immense pain after the June rehab start, and that when he felt that pain crop up again on, you know, Sunday, that he knew, I got to get this checked out.
I mean, he said it was affecting him doing daily routine activities, like just, you know, reaching for something, you know, he would feel it. I mean, that's, and he's trying to throw a baseball 100 times at, you know, 95 miles an hour or whatever. I mean, geez.
You know, and like, I don't want to get too far ahead. One the thing that I was thinking about when I was originally planning out our podcast today, I'm like, is this the worst signing for Theo and Jed? And I think I kind of had a woe.
Yeah.
Again, woe that thing.
No.
Because I want to make Ryan laugh.
Too early. Because, again, I believe it's an 8-year deal.
Six-year
deal. Six-year deal. Six-year deal, and you're in year one.
Yeah.
Pitchers get hurt. that's just a given in Major League Baseball, especially with power arms and guys who throw 95 to 100 miles.
No one's got top Edwin Jackson.
who's now pitching very well for Oakland, by the way.
It's just very weird. Is everything that happens in Oakland just
it's bizarro world in Oakland.
What the fuck is happening?
There's three former Cubs starting pitchers.
Trevor Cahill.
Brett Anderson is starting for and doing great.
I give up.
Anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, yeah, we're signing.
That is early.
Tyler Chatwood.
Yeah, okay, so that's the other part of this equation. You know, we have the Tyler Chatwood issue.
Yeah.
Leading the majors in walks. It's an understatement.
Wait, I was just walked by Tyler Chatwood.
I was just walked by Tyler Chatwood.
Wait, did you see you went to the DL with a quote-unquote hip injury?
Okay, now hip inflammation. I mean, that's not ironic, given how many times he's walked people. I mean, the guy walks so much.
He's too open in his pitch, his pitch mechanism. Yeah,
Hip inflammation. No, Chatwood goes to the DL with hip inflammation. We talked about how that brings up Alec Mills.
Yep.
Dylan Maples gets a call-up, which is a huge addition, given that this bullpen's going to need an extra arm, and this is a flamethrower you're bringing up.
Yeah.
You know, you can hit triple digits. Now, the one thing about him is when he has gotten called up in limited action, he's struggled a little bit on the major league level, but he did have, I think, a scoreless inning streak down in Iowa. So there is something there, and I think, again, with the postseason and the stretch run coming here, I think it's good to bring up an arm like that now so he can potentially make the postseason roster.
It's funny. September is going to be so important for you guys for different reasons than obviously just the jostling in the standings. They're going to need a few of the people on their 40-man roster who aren't here yet to be able to come and give them serviceable innings to kind of reserve your guys' bullpen and protect your starting pitching and try to put you in a position ultimately where you're at peak performance levels and certainly peak health come postseason time.
So that's a really good point to bring up there, because who is going to fill that void down the stretch?
Mm-hmm.
Darren wrote a great piece today about James Shields. So maybe making a waiver claim and a trade with the White Sox.
By the way, we will do that deal. No, I mean the White Sox. Like, we will do a waiver deal.
It was one of those things where...
Yeah, you're not getting a top prospect.
And initially, I thought about James Shields, and I'm like, oh, no, absolutely not. Never in a million years. And then I looked at his stats, and I'm like, okay, actually, I would take that on the Cubs in a heartbeat at this point.
So here's the thing with James Shields, and this is very, very important.
He got roughed up today. That's
But even today, this is the perfect example of what you're going to get from James Shields. When you need him to go and eat innings, he will eat shit and get hit and still eat those innings. Today against Detroit's the perfect example. He got destroyed, gave up 7 runs, still went 6 2/3 innings, and just allowed for Ryan Burr to come on and pitch the inning in a third.
That's valuable.
It really is.
He has the 7th most innings pitched in the league this year.
You know what I would love that on?
Before that start.
I would love that on the 2016 Cubs. Given the lineup woes also that have kind of... Now, we'll get to Daniel Murphy in a little bit, but there are some concerns that the lineup tends to be a bit inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually be really afraid if there's an outing like that where James Shields is like, I can keep going.
Now, here's the thing with Shields, too, is it's not just that. Like, the innings eating is certainly the first and foremost thing that you're getting there. But we've seen routinely with the White Sox this year that he has pitched significantly above where we think his talent level is. The changeup has been, he's the classic, corny, crafty veteran that y'all need.
The Bulldog. Hey,
playoff experience.
Yeah.
And, like you said, eats innings and will go at least 6 or 7 for you.
There's value in that, especially down the stretch, like
now,
we said. Like,
put
when
him
you're
with
trying
the Cubs
to conserve
defense,
bullpen arms,
exactly. That would help.
And the White Sox defense is not very good right now.
Now, that's the thing. Like, is this something, though, that the Cubs are willing to keep parting with? And I get it. They're giving up low prospects for guys like Cole Hamels.
They got Daniel Murphy for literally
for
nothing.
For a bag of peanuts. Like, I get it. You're not probably going to give up a ton for a guy like James Shields. But at some point, do you have to say, you know what? Do we just wait until Mike Montgomery gets back?
We got to develop pitchers. That's the biggest thing, the biggest problem we've had since, with the Theo era. Everything else has been very good, even more than that. But we haven't been able to develop.
You don't have a homegrown pitching.
Trivia question. Who has been the most productive homegrown pitcher that has been called up for the Chicago Cubs under Theo and Jed?
For a starter.
Truly homegrown, Rob's, meaning drafted.
Rob Zestrinsky or whatever.
Rob Zestrinsky.
Yeah.
And he is a bullpen arm.
Because you have bullpen arms that, like CJ Edwards, although he was a trade too, wasn't he?
No, they're all trades.
Yeah.
So basically every active pitcher
on
the Cubs roster was brought in via trade or free agent.
Luke Farrell.
Even he's not a guy that was homegrown. I mean, Luke Farrell.
Yeah,
like,
he sucks though.
Yeah,
so.
And like, so name the pitcher. They've all come from another organization.
Yeah.
So Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle Hendricks was raw when he came over. So, like, you did develop him. You worked him into the pitcher he is now.
Yeah, there's still something to be said for being able to draft and develop pitchers.
Well, there's a reason why the Cubs have signed John Lester, Yu Darvish, John Lackey, Tyler Chatwood, traded for Quintana.
You know how weird this season has been because of the Darvish injury, because of Tyler Chatwood's struggles. It really highlights the injury to Adbert Alzolay down in Iowa.
Yeah.
Because he was going to be the guy called up to either make spot starts or to be in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing the problem with him being hurt is you don't have that option to call up.
You don't have an immediate arm
in
your pen right now. Like, I'm looking through your prospect list right now and going through everybody that I can find, and the guy who they had to turn to ultimately is Dwayne Underwood Jr., who is their ninth prospect in the system. There are six or seven other pitchers ranked ahead of him at this point in their system, but they're all single A.
Yeah.
In that top list, mm-hmm. Alec Mills, where is he at right now in their top 30, I guess? It's usually how they list them.
Yeah, scrolling through, I don't see Alec anywhere in the top 30 from MLB's prospect watch.
Interesting, because Alec Mills has been a little bit more productive this year. And I guess the reason Dwayne Underwood was not...
The reason why he's not in here, by the way, is because he's 26. Mm. And they cut it off. Prospect pipeline cuts it off at 25.
Okay, so through the pipeline, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. But Dwayne Underwood, the reason why he's not up and pitching is because I guess he recently had a start down in Iowa. And so that's why you're not getting him up at this point. Because that's what I thought they would actually bring up for the start on Friday. But
I don't think they want to, you know, throw another pitch out there with Wood in their name. Especially after Tyler
Chatwood.
Although Kerry Wood.
I'm trying to think of nicknames for Tyler Chatwood. We got Crapwood.
Walk This Way.
Chatwalk.
They're all so bad, typically Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, what else do you call him? I mean, he's Deadwood.
Let me tell you, this Shatwood guy, like, he shat his pants. He's terrible.
I'm not a fan of Shatwood, but I do like this guy that the Bears have named Chase Daniels. He's going to be really good.
Even robot umps wouldn't help Tyler Chatwood.
Nothing would help Tyler Chatwood.
That Chase Daniels making connections with Alshon Jeffries is going to be a top pairing.
Alshon Jeffries is dead, though, isn't he?
He is?
He's not here. I even see that 17 got shorter.
Where's Trubinsky? All
right, back to the smaller bear, the Cubs. I want to get to, though, some of the pitching down the stretch other than, you know, who fills that void. I think it's clear that it's probably going to end up being Mike Montgomery down
the
stretch.
Once he gets back, yes.
What you have right now, you have Cole Hamels. And Cole Hamels has been...
Lights out.
And I actually think if he keeps pitching at this level, they're picking up that option. And yeah. I would have never thought that. And you remember, if you are an avid reader of the Chicago Sports Comp, you would know that I've kind of been on this Cole Hamels kick for a while now. I've been hinting to that. And, you know, when they made the move, I thought this could be a very nice low-risk, high-reward proposition. It's turning out that way.
Yes.
And I don't even think I saw, though, a scenario where he'd be so good that you would think about picking up that option.
No.
And you can tell he just flipped the switch. As soon as you got into a pennant race, he's like, and out of Texas, out of Arlington, yeah.
And that's been his track record. Like, when he's locked into a playoff race and playing at a high level, you start to see a guy that is ace caliber.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pitching like that right now. He's pitching like an ace. So you have that going down the stretch. You know, you have Kyle Hendricks seems to be turning the corner.
Yeah.
We referred to him on the previous podcast, but, you know, it sounds like I'm a fanboy of this guy's work. David Kaplan from ESPN 1000 and NBC Sports Chicago actually did a really good piece on Kyle Hendricks changing up his arm slot. And by changing up his arm slot, he's actually locked in a little bit more. He's given up more runs when he was at a lower release point. Hmm. He's back to where he was the last two seasons. And you're starting to see that number go down a little bit. He's been able to get deeper and deeper into ball games. He's really looked good in the last month or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he's had a few seven-inning starts. He's been going into the seventh, you know, a decent amount lately. He was kind of a hard luck loser last time, but, you know, even though he gave up the 10 hits, only two runs in seven innings.
That's something you get with Kyle Hendricks. Obviously, yes. You're going to pitch to a certain level of contact. You're not going to miss a ton of bass with it. And so you're going to have starts like that where you'll give up 10 and maybe only give up two runs.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly hope to get wins on those days. Mm-hmm. But that's something that's ultimately out of his control.
Those first innings, though, always seems to get, like, he's trying to find that release point in that first inning.
Yeah, I don't remember the split, but I saw a tweet the other day with the stats between where he's been in the first inning, which is like a plus 1,000 OPS or around 1,000 OPS, and then the rest of the game he turns into a guy who pitches to like a low 600s OPS.
I think people were joking that they should do an opener for Kyle Hendricks starts.
Dude, get Ricky Stanek from the Tampa Bay Rays to throw an inning and 2/3 every second day.
Sergio Romo.
So this is where it gets interesting, though. So John Lester, the last two starts have been pretty solid.
Yep, he's bounced back.
But yeah, he did, you know, after July 1st, there was he was trending downward. He seems to have locked in at this point, getting back to at least solid production, but you still can't say, well, I'm fully confident that he's turned a corner.
So I'm one of the nerds. I think the peripherals bear out pretty well that he's not going to continue to pitch that far above. Again, I mean, we talked about this again in the previous podcast with the White Sox baseball talk, that in any given season, you can have a full run and a half differential between what your peripherals say you should be and what you're actually going to be. John Lester, for a very long portion of the season, was pitching to like two and a half runs above what the peripherals say he should be. That's not sustainable even in the short period of a 33-34 game season. Now, here's the good news. The reason why you don't have to be totally pessimistic about it is he's still talented and he's still going to be a value to you in the postseason.
He's still got the Cubs defense.
So what you need is he just needs to not get wrapped into this whole shit about like, oh, all the nerds say I'm going to be bad. I'm not going to be bad.
He doesn't.
You're probably going to be bad for a little while.
Guys that can get past the noise.
You're probably going to be bad for a little while throughout the course of the rest of this regular season, but just go pitch your lights out in the postseason. That's all that matters.
It is interesting. After two outings ago when he got roughed up, it was like after that he's like, no, I'm not gonna come out like this again.
Yep.
And since then, it's almost like the switch has flipped. That's kind of a trend with the Cubs. I want to get into that a little bit later about switch flipping. Heyo,
ComEd sponsored this segment.
We wish we would be significantly richer.
We would be broadcasting in light, that's for sure.
So heyo,
wait, are we broadcasting?
That? I think so. I got the candles.
Then what I'm seeing right now is seriously a problem.
So we know Hamels, Hendricks, Lester, you hope he's turned the corner. This is where it gets, though, I think, interesting come postseason time. And Darren, I'm curious your thoughts on this especially. We've seen Jose Quintana. And Jose Quintana has had, I think, surprising struggles. You know, I thought he would be a solid number two. He looks like maybe he's a number three at best. Maybe even at his floor, he's a number five. With Jose Quintana maybe pitching the way he's pitching lately, would you, going into the postseason, who would be your number four guy? Would it be Quintana, or would it be Mike Montgomery?
I guess it depends on how they both finish up the season, because obviously Quintana has, you know, the pedigree and, you know, from just when he was with the White Sox that he's pitched particularly well. If he can, like you said, flip a switch, he has that potential if he can put it all together. But if Montgomery is the hot hand going down the stretch, then it's hard to put Quintana, you know, in that rotation. You know, he might not make the roster, the postseason roster. If Montgomery is pitching lights out, is what I'm saying.
I mean, he's still on the roster for one. He's left-handed.
Yeah.
So
he's too
even
valuable.
In the event that he's not
long relief,
yeah, you're going to be a guy or just a specialist. He's going to get outs against left-handers.
We have Randy Rosario with a gun.
I don't know. To me, like, and this is just—it's a question that's worth asking. But to me, I'm still putting queue out there to be the starter. Mm-hmm. I would rather have Mike Montgomery in his natural role out of the pen.
We need the lefties.
Here's the thing. There is something to be said for the actual ability to come out of the pen in a very, very uncomfortable situation, because when you're a long reliever, you're almost certainly coming in a situation where you don't have a lead, and they're going to be asking you to throw for three or four innings and be able to eat up as many of those pitches and certainly not surrender any more runs and put you in a position where you can claw your way back into that baseball game. That's not something you can take a normal starter out of the rotation and just say, okay, do that for me now. There's a mentality that goes into it, and Mike obviously has mastered certain levels of that. So it's probably easier to an extent. Even if he's the better option at that point, from a statistical standpoint, you can't say with certainty that it's going to be something that Jose Quintana can do for you. So do you flip-flop the roles, especially if it's so borderline like we're expecting it to be?
Yeah, and Quintana always seems to have one bad inning.
Yes.
That's really what kills him. You know, he'll give up five or six runs in a start, but four or five of them come in that one bad inning. Mm-hmm. It always seems like Joe might leave him in one inning too long.
You know what I think is making this even worse with Jose Quintana is you keep, you know, seeing all the things that are going on with Eloy Jimenez down in AAA. Yeah. You keep seeing...
He's good.
You know, you hear about that. You hear about Dylan Cease taking major steps forward.
Also looking significantly better than the Cubs thought that he was.
Well, yeah. You know, it's weird. Rick Sutcliffe used to always hype up Dylan Cease coming out of spring training every year. He'd say, hey, this Dylan Cease guy, I think he actually has... really, you know, solid potential. He's at his very worst is going to be a very valuable bullpen arm.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see that with the White Sox right now, or in the White Sox farm system.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Cease in particular was the stuff was always there. It was always electric. He's starting to hone his craft a little bit there. I don't think the Cubs foresaw that necessarily, especially with his tiny little diminutive stature. He's like 6 feet tall.
No,
and he weighs like 165 pounds. So he's like a little Patrick Kane out there, but he's got a 98-mile-an-hour fastball.
CJ Edwards.
Yeah. CJ Edwards. Fastball with like a big, giant looping curveball to boot. So,
and I think that's my take on it is I would rather have a locked-up arm in the bullpen. Because let's say Q struggles, or whoever it is, fill in the blank struggles. I'd rather have Mike Montgomery come in that situation.
Yeah, because he's used to that role.
The nice thing is you can pitch the matchups a little bit easier with Quintana as your starter and Mike in the bullpen. Because, you know, if Joe Maddon, we know that especially he's been hair trigger even in the regular season. You know, in the postseason, he's going to be particularly hair trigger to pull a starter.
As Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do know that, like, he's not afraid to tap into the bullpen. And the Cubs' bullpen has some very solid pieces. But long relief is the area where I think they just need that one guy.
Mm-hmm.
James Shields.
Big game James. You know, if he did come, if your scenario did line up and he was a Cub, I do think he would actually make the postseason roster.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think they would consider him in that long relief role as well.
Well, and Joe, like you just said, he would pull a guy after an inning or two if he didn't feel like he had his best stuff, just to give him, you know, give us the best chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
And he would do that in a heartbeat.
For sure. And, you know, we're talking about the postseason run, and I think it's important as we, you know, kind of move on here. The Cubs made another big acquisition, and a stunning one. Daniel Murphy, the Cubs killer. Washington Nationals is a Cub. You know, I wrote about the fact that there, from a baseball sense, it's a phenomenal insurance policy. I think right off the bat, let's attack the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah.
Okay. The comments he made in 2015 about, you know, his thoughts on homosexuality,
which are not good thoughts.
Not good at all. You know, I think, and if you want, you can just Google it. You'll be able to read
the
it.
Deadspin all those article. Thoughts.
There's Deadspin article. There's a ton of articles about.
Yeah, there's plenty of
that.
Articles. And if you feel uncomfortable right now, you can fast forward about 4 minutes.
Probably.
And we should be through this portion of it, but you probably should listen to it because you should know who you have.
How how do you guys feel about that portion? I am of the mindset, let me put this out here. I'm able to separate the sports from rooting for the guy. Like, the actual reasoning behind making this acquisition. I never hold sports teams to a moral compass because I know you're going to get your heart broken every time.
Yeah, I'll start with that. And I think that's probably the most important element to it. Like, if I made every single determination I made as just a sports watcher, forget even as a sports fan, based off of, you know, are the people who are out there reaping the reward of my viewership or my attendance at said sporting event going to be of the utmost, just the highest moral character humanly possible? The answer is almost always no. And so to sit here and you know, just try to split hairs in that regard, it is certainly difficult. And so I know that sports teams are ultimately going to do what's best for their bottom line. And what's best for their bottom line is almost always the winning. So from that regard, I'm not going to sit here and fault the Cubs because they were able to give up next to nothing to get an extremely productive...
And we're going to get to that portion of it a little bit.
Yes, but in terms of, obviously, personal preference, for one, I'm not a Cubs fan, so it's a lot easier for me to say than for you know, an actual Cubs fan, obviously. And you guys will have your thoughts on this, but I wish... that if the White Sox were in a similar situation, that they would not have made that acquisition based on those things. That's a personal preference of mine, and I also am realistic in the fact that the White Sox would not make that decision based on those actual parameters. I know they wouldn't. So it's a pipe dream. I know it's a pipe dream, but I really do wish that franchises were making decisions based on whether or not people were good people sometimes. I don't say that you should have to... stock your roster with a bunch of people who are choir boys who've never made any mistakes in their entire lives. That's not realistic either. We've all made mistakes.
For the record, I do want to put this out there. Outsports did report, I think before this season, that Billy Bean, not that Billy Bean, but he's one of the first openly gay baseball players years ago.
Yeah.
He's an ambassador for Major League Baseball and for, you know, these kind of situations. And he was the player in question that made Daniel Murphy make those comments. He apparently told OutSports, which is a gay sports blog, or a homosexual sports blog, that...
SB Nation, I believe, helps them, or is really somewhere affiliated.
I think
to
so.
Them. It's a great blog. You should check it out if you haven't before.
They actually had reported that, you know, Billy Bean had told them that, you know, he's talked with Daniel Murphy, and Daniel Murphy's kind of flipped his perspective a little bit since then, and that they are... Billy Bean says that they are friends. I take that for what you will, but that's apparently what.
So that's important discourse.
It is.
Period.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely important to bring that up. It should not be left out of the record. It's always important, I think, that you have people with dissenting opinions who are able to say, listen, we might not agree on certain things. However, we can still be cordial. We can still be friendly with one another.
Yeah. And
that's always paramount.
Now, the other thing that did come out of this, I guess, is, you know, you have to keep this in mind. The Ricketts family. You have Laura Ricketts, who's openly gay. And I guess that was a big part of this, is that they talked with Billy Bean and they asked him about this situation. He said, I think everything's good with Daniel Murphy. You have my blessing, essentially, to make that move. And I'm not saying that that makes it better. I think it's something to keep in the back of your mind when it comes to a situation like this. Darren, your perspective, I guess. How do you feel about... making a move like this?
I mean, I think it is important that all of that information came out with Billy Bean and with the Ricketts family, you know, basically saying, yeah, this is okay with us, and them being such a big part of the, you know, the gay community with I think you said Laura Ricketts. I think that's very important, but I don't know. I mean,
you still feel a little dirty, like it's...
Well, it's still Daniel Murphy, and I'm still so salty about 2015, just from a sports perspective. Don't get me wrong. What he said, I don't agree with, you know, whatsoever, but we are
For the record, I think the three of us don't agree
with
that.
But we are all human beings, and human beings do deserve a chance to change for the better and to understand different perspectives. And I think Daniel Murphy has thought about what he said, and he has learned that, you know... you know, become better from that.
I will say this. When he did say that, there wasn't the massive backlash. And I wonder if, you know, is it him? And you don't want to guess, because I never want to put words into somebody's mouth. But did he say this because of the negative backlash? Or, you know, did he actually authentically change his perspective? Mm-hmm. He didn't get a lot of backlash from what I remember. I actually had to read this.
I'll give him credit in the sense that his animus was based solely on the fact that, based on his religion, he disagrees with their lifestyle. There are certainly significantly worse ways to color homosexuality than that. Now, at the same time, that's not meant to give a pass to people.
No.
You're talking about genuine human beings who are out there trying to live their lives, and anything that colors them as less than is making things significantly more difficult for them. And so if we hide it behind the guise of Christianity solely, it makes things that much worse for them, because it gives everybody an out to say, well, I'm a Christian too, so I don't have to agree with their lifestyle.
No, I totally agree with that too. And I do want to put a bow on this, because I do want to get to the baseball portion of it. But I think it's important to bring this up. If you are a Cubs fan and you don't feel comfortable rooting for the Cubs because of this, or you don't feel comfortable rooting for Daniel Murphy because of this, you have every right to do so.
Yes.
There's no...
Absolutely.
There is no reason why you should look and say, well, that you're not a real fan. Nope. That I think if you feel that way, then you have every right to be upset with the move they made.
It was the same thing with the Aroldis Chapman.
And that's I did want to bring that up, you know, when I wrote the piece about him being an insurance policy, I threw that in, because I think it is definitely important to note. You can't just gloss that over.
No.
I think we've seen a lot of that in some initial reports off the bat. But from the baseball perspective.
Yes.
Adding his bat's huge. Because this
certainly is.
This is the type of guy that, if you have runners in scoring position, if I have a runner on third with one out, I know Daniel Murphy is probably going to hit a fly ball or put the ball in play somehow to drive that runner home.
Yes.
That's just how he's been the last four seasons.
He's been like a 340 hitter with Washington.
He has. And like that's the thing. Like, it's all come together since that last season with the Mets. And, you know, we know
he killed
Cubs fans. You know, how productive he's been. And he's been very productive in his postseason career, even if you include his Nationals career. He's been a Cubs killer, you know, with the Nationals. And not just a Cubs killer. He's been a National League, a Major League killer. The guy is solid as a hitter.
You mentioned in your piece about the versatility that he ultimately provides. We know that Joe Maddon loves to play the splits. Absolutely adores it. And you get a left-handed bat who you can now converse with the idea of Addison Russell and Javi Baez being right-headed bats in your central infield. So it gives you some options to rotate through based on pitching matchups. You can do a ton of stuff.
How juiced do you get? And I'm using this. You got to listen to the previous podcast.
It's very important. That's another callback.
Because you got to listen to both. But how juiced, how excited do you get? And I'm looking more at you, Darren.
Who's that?
At potentially having a lineup that might, at some point, you know, depending on Chris Bryant's health, although it does appear that he will be back probably in September when they expand the roster.
Yeah, he's not going to pull a Yu Darvish.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood. Knock on champ wood.
But you could have a scenario where you have in your lineup Murphy, Bryant, Rizzo, 2, 3, 4.
And Baez.
Think about
in
that.
Like fourth.
That's... Like, if you have that, that makes you feel pretty comfortable going into a postseason.
And even, again, going back to the stuff that Joe Maddon likes to do, we also know he loves a balanced lineup going lefty-righty, lefty-righty, so that they can't stack specialists against somebody.
Get
Daniel as a left-hander, Chris Bryant as a right-hander, Anthony Rizzo as a left-hander, Javi Baez as a right-hander.
Okay, you're giving me a chubby right now. You're giving me a cubby-chubby that's so, so massive right now. Now, this is one thing, though. You know, Russell has gone now to the DL as well because he's got about 50 different nagging injuries. I think
every single extremity he has, injured.
I think it was basically they're saying knuckles, shoulder, head, shoulders, knees and toes. They're saying, though, basically that happened because they wanted to make way for Daniel Murphy, and they figured, you know what, let Russell get right.
Better to kick the can on the 40-man roster decisions.
Exactly. And this is what I'm wondering, though. If he comes back, the one thing, like, we're talking about Daniel Murphy's bat. His defense is atrocious. And especially since coming back from micro-fracture knee surgery, he's even a step slower. And the defense is... Meh.
Like, Zobrist is better than him.
Yes. There was a bloop single last night where, like, anybody else on the Cubs infield probably would get that. Daniel Murphy can't. So you do have that in the back of your mind. If it were you, Ryan, okay, if you were Joe Matt, I gave you the glasses, I gave you Binnie's
try not to suck sponsorship, shirts.
You know, you're constantly throwing cliches out there.
I'm from Pennsylvania now.
Yeah, you're from Pennsylvania, and
let's
you
get it.
You always talk about drinking a glass of wine with dinner. Are you looking at valuing Murphy's bat over Russell's defense, or Russell's defense over Murphy's bat down the stretch or in the postseason?
Well, again, we know that Joe Madden's an analytical person, and that there are actual, you know, outputs that we can look at that can say, well, is his defense going to be more of a hindrance to us than his offense is? Now, again, don't get me wrong. It's not the end-all be-all of the way baseball works. In certain situations, an extremely poor defender can cost you a baseball game just on one play basis alone. I think you guys might have a very specific example thinking back in your Cubs history.
2008 postseason, I got a great example.
Poor defense. Also, someone who maybe booted a double play ball that led to a Bartman incident.
Alex Gonzalez.
Excuse me. But, yes, so we've seen in instances
PTSD
where, yes, absolutely.
Less though so now because of
individual plays defensively can absolutely destroy you from a baseball perspective. But baseball being as long of a season as it is, even as long of a postseason as it is, we look at it traditionally from the collective standpoint, and we know that Daniel Murphy's bat outweighs the defense. Yes, there are going to be isolated incidents where you're going to be, ah, shit, this fucking guy again. But for the most part, you're looking at a guy who had a 985 OPS in 2016, which led the entire, all of Major League Baseball, a 928 OPS last year in Washington. And even though his numbers have been a little bit more pedestrian this year, you're still talking about a guy who can do significant damage.
Yeah, and I think
he's still hitting 300.
Yeah, and it's because the last 28 since the break have been...
Yeah, he started off horribly. I think he was hitting like 158 at one point. And has just been on a tear.
Yeah, he's shot out of a cannon since then. Darren, if it were up to you, like, I think I know your answer on this. I mean, I think you and I both would take the bat over Russell's defense just because of how
Russell's
crap he's been
just brutal at the plate lately. Like, he's not even having productive at bats. And maybe that's because of his 78 injuries.
Yeah, it's all 78 injuries.
The thing is, you can balance the two. It doesn't necessarily have to be either or. Now, there are certain situations where you have to make that decision, but...
Oh,
I see Russell coming in the
is there a game?
As a defensive...
Are we about to play a game?
Oh, I got games.
He's got games for games.
I always got games. So, I have actually... earlier on, I have called out in a previous piece that you have struggles not only from Russell. You have it from Schwarber.
Yeah.
Schwarber's been awful since the All-Star break. Ian Happ has been woefully bad since
Happ's
the
been
break.
Worse than Schwarber.
Yes.
Schwarber's still at least hitting homers.
His slash line is ridiculous. I want to say he's hitting like almost 180 at this point. Like, this is the one thing that I kind of have in the back of my head. Is it possible that maybe the odd man out could be Kyle Schwarber down the stretch? Because think about this. If Bryant comes back, there could be a scenario where you trot Bryant out in left field. You move Javi Baez to third, and you have Murphy playing second, allowing you to keep Russell at shortstop. Now, you'd still have the bad defense in the infield,
yes.
But you'd be able to still have the best possible lineup and keep a solid shortstop.
If it's
in
a
time.
Right-handed starter, though, you're probably having Schwarber in left. Because
this is
he's
true.
Hit 22 homers against right-handed.
Are you playing the matchups in that
now,
case?
Now, here's the thing, though, worth noting. Daniel Murphy can actually also play left field in a pinch.
This is true.
Done it. Now, it's been
oh, God,
7 years.
He's slower than Schwarber, probably.
Yeah, but, I mean, now, granted, Kyle Schwarber has, I think, surprised everybody in terms
Cannon
of the way he's played.
Man.
defensively out there in left field this year.
That's my left fielder.
But he also put up with a couple of years now of Kyle Schwarber playing extremely poorly in left field because of what he brought you to the table as a bat. And you can plug him out there in certain situations, you know, depending on what you think you have on a given day. If Schwarber needs a day off, you can plug Daniel Murphy out there. It's not ideal by any means, but you have, again, a little bit more additional versatility.
That's true. You can actually play Javi in the outfield, because then he'd take reps out there at one point.
One thing I did note, too, is you're adding, when you bring in a guy like Murphy, you're adding more redundancy, and that's one thing that the Cubs have, is a ton of redundancy in the infield and the outfield.
Yeah. I'd rather have Happ out there, then, because he's a switch hitter, and he's probably a better defender than Murphy. You would probably want to keep Murphy at second.
There's so many potential combinations. I trust Joe to get it right, because he's always been able to put that right, especially when the postseason comes, he's able to put that right combination together, and he'll let them run.
They're going to be, I would assume, so long as, if things break injury-wise the way that you guys hope they're going to, there are going to be a lot of instances where Daniel Murphy does not start in postseason games, because he has so much value to you against a right-handed pitcher as a lefty in a pitch hitting situation. So, yeah, I don't necessarily know that it has to be one or the other when we talk about any of these guys, because Joe Madden's going to plug and play based on the way people are playing, you know, how streaky they are, and the matchups, obviously.
You know, and that's what ended up happening in 2016. Mm-hmm. You know, he rode all those hot hands, and he switched up the lineup enough down the stretch. You know, you saw moments where Jason Hayward was in right field, and he put Zobrist in right field, and you know, we saw Wilson Contreras.
There's another guy that can play outfield, yeah. Ben Zobrist.
And you saw Wilson Contreras go out to left field in some circumstances. So
Zobrist has been hitting really well this year, too. He actually has more hits already this year than he did all of last year.
He's been consistent all season long. Yeah. I mean,
great at bat.
It's interesting. He's been consistent all season long. Jason Hayward's been surprisingly consistent.
Been the most clutch hitter with Javi.
He's come back to earth a little bit, but it seems like when he's up at the plate with runners on, he's at least making contact.
He's having much better at bats. He's fouling fastballs off. He's not swinging through them anymore. That was the big thing last year. He couldn't hit the fastball. Now he can hit the fastball with authority.
Chili Davis has had a positive effect on him. Has Chili Davis chilled the other Cubs bats?
Contreras.
Like, Wilson Contreras
looks really rough at the plate right now.
It's worth discussing. Like, Chili Davis has an old school approach to hitting. It's very like old school move the line style, where, you know, John Maley was all about launch angle. He was the new school of hitting coaches. And now you're going to the Chili Davis effect, which you saw with Boston. Boston didn't hit a lot of home runs. Now they're exploding.
Boston still had a really good offense.
It's true. I don't want to blame it all on the hitting.
Don't y'all still lead the National League?
The eye test will tell you it's freaking ugly.
Five straight solo shot
here
homer games with one run.
Here, let me tell you where I agree with you on that. Yes, they lead the National League. They still lead their division. They're up 2.5 on the Cards, 3 on the Brewers as of today, August 23rd. But what I see is it's a really crappy National League, okay? Like the National League is very skittish. Nobody, once one team takes two steps forward, they take one step back.
Yeah.
And the Cubs are doing that. The problem that I have is I expect a lot more from that Cubs lineup and that Cubs roster. I expect them, because they are, from what we've watched for the last 2 years, they're an American League team plopped in the National League. And right now, they're just playing like they're back with the rest of the pack.
Still no Chris Bryant, though.
Still no Chris Bryant. And that's a big part of it. That's true.
So I'm painting with broad strokes here, because obviously I'm not paying nearly as close attention to the Cubs as I am to the White Sox. But does it feel like their lineup is constantly disrupted by some of the little injuries, the 10-day DL stints that they've run into throughout the course of the year? I'm not trying to say that they're more injured than anybody else necessarily, but
I don't even think it's been injury. It's just been
Chris Bryant, really.
Chris Bryant's the biggest injury, and I think it's been trying to fill that void. But even this is what's been odd with the Cubs. When the lineup is rolling, the starting pitching is rolling. When the starting pitching is rolling, the lineup hits a funk. it seems like, you know, Paul Konerko actually had said this once, and I thought it was great. Like, you have nine guys in your lineup. A third are hitting towards their average, a third are hot, and a third suck. And what's going on with the Cubs is it's probably two-thirds of the lineup is cold, and you got three other guys that might actually be playing at a high level. I think that's where it's very frustrating, and that's usually the sign of mediocre baseball. Now
I'll be honest with you. When I think about that, the idea of it, and obviously I haven't looked at like the metrics behind it, and you know how crazy I am about the analytical side of those things, but to me that would indicate that there's a decent chance at some point over the course of the next, you know, 6 weeks of the season,
they're going to explode
heading into the postseason. Well, at least if they'll just start to track together and get on the same page and start to give you more consistency at some point.
You know what?
Because we do know that this lineup is actually supposed to be significantly better than what it's been, or at least more consistent.
I'm gonna put a bow around this. I'm gonna throw this out here because I said about flipping the switch. You know what the Cubs remind me of? The Cubs remind me of an NBA team. Because I get this feeling that in the Chicago Cubs' minds, and I don't know this fully, but just guessing, that they think that, you know what, we can flip this. We've done it. Because they have. In 2016 against the Dodgers, down 2-1, things were looking grim because the lineup was ice cold, dating back to the previous series against the Giants, and they flip a switch. Anthony Rizzo, Addison Russell get red hot. The World Series, down 3-1 to the Indians. Flip a switch, they get red hot, they end up winning it. Last year, going into the All-Star break, you know, things weren't looking that good. They were at 500, and they were back, you know, I think, what, four games back of the Brewers, and then all of a sudden they went on a surge.
Yeah.
They have, it's in their track record, and the thing is, when they're all playing, like, the numbers on their back of their baseball cards, they should be lights out the best team in the National League. They have that potential. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird. We were talking about the starting pitching, right? We're talking about Jose Quintana. If Jose Quintana plays like Jose Quintana, you know that that's a solid pitcher going to the postseason.
Exactly.
Same with Kyle Hendricks. Same with John Lester.
Yeah.
You know, it's same with every guy in the Cubs lineup. So there's always that in the back of your head. It's one of the few teams in baseball where you can say, if they flip a switch, you're not surprised.
Mm-hmm. Like, watch out.
Any other team in the National League, if you said, oh, that team's going to win the World Series, I'd say, no. If you told me the Cubs are going to win the World Series, I'd say, yeah, I could see that. Would I bet the mortgage on it? No. But could I see it? Yes, I could see it.
It's weird because, I mean, it's like you mentioned, if things had just essentially broken right for them over the course of the first 4.5 months of this season, you wouldn't expect them to be in the dogfight that they're in right now. You'd expect them to be probably a team that has 80, 82, 84 wins right now and are just well clear of the rest of the pack in the NL Central. And so, like, Pythagorean doesn't think that they're supposed to be any better than what they are. And now it's a horrible indicator over the course of a year of how good a team's supposed to be. But what it will normally tell you is, like, hey, their peripherals either way outperformed what they're supposed to be or their peripherals way underperformed what they're supposed to be. And with the Cubs, it's kind of tracking even, but I think we would all look at the collective and say, yes, they're supposed to be better. So is there somewhere over the course of the next 6 weeks a place where they can kind of regain that form and really look dominant the way they should, given the quality of the roster?
That's what's amazing is the fact that we're saying that they should be better, and there's still almost 20 games above 500.
Exactly. True. And still
with the best
in a
record
very
in the National
good
League.
Position as the best team in the National League and with a decent cushion in the NL Central.
This is when you know you're in a golden era of your franchise's history.
Yeah.
Because if you're able to, in this situation, this is like the worst season that they've had in this four-game stretch. And last year was kind of a dogfight down the stretch. You know, but you're having this discussion because it all matters and it's highly competitive baseball. So you start splitting hairs the more your expectations get raised.
This is where, as a White Sox fan, no matter like how dogged shit gets where we try to talk shit about like, oh, well, we got our championship in 05, then you guys win in 16, and then we talk more shit to one another. As a White Sox fan, you absolutely have to be envious of where you guys have become as a franchise over the course of the last 4 years in totality, because the White Sox never had that. Even with the 2005 championship, yes, they were good again in 2006, horrible in 2007. They made the postseason again in 2008.
Blackout game.
Yep.
But you got to get Ken Griffey Jr. for that stretch run.
Jim Tomey's home run, though. That's like the White Sox, Jim Tomey going in, Hall of Fame. That's like the crowning achievement of his entire White Sox career. But, again, like we all talk shit back and forth to each other, but White Sox fans absolutely have to be envious of what you guys have going right now because the window is so wide open. Still, even when things aren't going right, you're still so good, and the White Sox have never had that. They've always needed shit to go perfectly for them, and you guys have built something where you have, you've had the last 4 years, basically, and you probably are going to have 4 to 6 more years where not everything necessarily has to go perfectly for you to be a title contender because that's how good your roster is.
And this reminds me a lot of almost the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're kind of getting into this rough patch right now because you're kind of having to reassess some things. And I think right now for the Cubs, it's reassessing starting pitching. And that's going to be interesting, too. Like, with all these redundancies we talk about, who's going to be that sacrificial lamb to get dealt for potentially a starting pitcher down, you know, going into next season. So it's going to be fun to watch everything down the stretch here, see if they, you know, shore up some things pitching-wise and see if Chris Bryant gets back, because that's going to be huge. So for all the latest on the Cubs, visit the Chicago Sports Column at www.chicagosportscolumn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Chi Sports Column, that's C-H-I Sports Column, and like us on Facebook. You'll find in-depth analysis and reaction as well as episodes of the Curses and Champions podcast. And speaking of the podcast,
hey,
all episodes are now available to be streamed on Spotify and Google Play.
Shut the front door.
Stream it. You can download it. You can subscribe, obsess over it. That's what we're here for, man.
Listen to it over and over.
We're also on MySpace.
Yes, we are.
My MySpace is still open.
We are not on AIM.
Rest
you
in peace.
You could have chatted with
us. I have like 7 screen names on that.
Sad it's face. Dead.
God, it's gone. It's gone. With Darren Zaitlin, Ryan Wooden, I'm Matt Gentile. Thanks for listening.